ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 27 अटैक बाय चंडवेग ऑन द सिटी ऑफ पुरंजन टेक्स्ट 12 युक्तेष्वेवं प्रमतस्य कुटुंबासक्तचेतसः आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रिययोषिताम् युक्तेष्वेवं प्रमत्तस्य कुटुंबासक्तचेतसः आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रिययोषिताम् युक्तेष्वेवं प्रमत्तस्य कुटुंबासक्तचेतसः आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रिययोषिताम् आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रिययोषिताम् आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रिययोषिताम् लेडीज प्लीज युक्तेष्वेवं प्रमत्तस्य कुटुंबासक्तचेतसः आससादस वै कालो Yukteshu, to beneficial activities. Evam, thus, pramattasya, being inattentive. Kutumba, to kith and kin. Asakta, attached. Chetasaha, consciousness. Asasada, arrived. Saha, that. Why? Certainly. Kalah, time. Yaha, which. Apriyah, not very pleasing. Priyayoshitam, for persons attached to women. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thus King Puranjana, being attached to fruit of activities, karmakandiya, as well as kith and kin, and being obsessed with polluted consciousness, eventually arrived at that point not very much liked by those who are overly attached to material things. Purport. In this verse, the words Priya Yoshitam and Apriyaha are very significant. The word Yoshit means woman, and Priya means dear or pleasing. Death is not very much welcome for those who are too much attached to material enjoyment, which culminates in sex. There is an instructive story in this connection. Once, when a saintly person was passing on his way, he met a prince, the son of a king, and blessed him, saying, "My dear prince, may you live forever." The sage next met a saintly person and said to him, "You may either live or die." Eventually, the said sage met a brahmachari devotee and blessed him, saying, "My dear devotee, you may die immediately." Finally, the sage met a hunter and he blessed him, saying, "Neither live nor die." The point is that those who are very sensual and are engaged in sense gratification do not wish to die. Generally, a prince has enough money to enjoy his senses. Therefore, the great sage said that he should live forever. For as long as he lived, he could enjoy life. But after his death, he would go to hell. Since the brahmachari devotee was leading a life of severe austerities and penances in order to be promoted back to Godhead, the sage said that he should die immediately so that he need not continue to labor hard and could instead go back home, back to Godhead. A saintly person may either live or die, for during his life he is engaged in serving the Lord, and after his death he also serves the Lord. Thus this life and the next are the same for a saintly devotee, for in both he serves the Lord. Since the hunter lives a very ghastly life due to killing animals, and since he will go to hell when he dies, he is advised to neither live nor die. King Puranjana finally arrived at the point of old age. In old age, the senses lose their strength, and although an old man desires to enjoy his senses, especially sex life, he is very miserable because his instruments of enjoyment no longer function. Such sensualists are never prepared for death. They simply want to live on and extend their life by so-called scientific advancement. Some foolish Russian scientists also claim that they are going to make man immortal through scientific advancement. Under the leadership of such crazy fellows, civilization is going on. Cruel death, however, comes and takes all of them away, despite their desire to live forever. This type of mentality was exhibited by Hiranyakashipu, but when the time was ripe, the Lord personally killed him within a second. And tomorrow is the grand appearance of Chandavega. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। युक्तेषु एवं प्रमत्तस्य कुटुंबासक्त चेतसः आससादस वै कालो यो प्रिय प्रियोषितम्। दिस किंग पुरंजना बीइंग अटैच्ड टू फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटीज कर्मकांडीय एज वेल एज किथ एंड किन एंड बीइंग ऑब्सेस्ड विथ पोल्यूटेड कॉन्शियसनेस इवेंचुअली अराइव्ड एट दैट पॉइंट नॉट वेरी मच लाइक्ड बाय दोज हु आर ओवरली अटैच्ड टू मटीरियल थिंग्स। Every living entity is eternal. Eternality means that there is no birth or death, and that life is to be experienced in its true nature. The artificial existence is when a soul is put into a temporary situation or a series of temporary situations called the material body and material life. Matter has this characteristic that it has a beginning and it has an end. Antavanta ime deha nityasya ukta sharirinaha. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that this body is something that will come to an end, antavanta. But within this body is nitya ukta sharirinaha, nitya sa ukta. It is said that within this temporary body, it is an eternal living entity. Nitya is always residing within the temporary body. And the supposed purpose of human life is to come to understand that, not just in a theoretical manner, but in a factual manner. And one of the ways in which this lesson is imparted is through the medium of death. Death means a change of situation. So like that, the body is continuously going through death in one sense. Every change of body is death. So there is the ultimate death, and then there is what we can call intermediary deaths. In the intermediary deaths, the body undergoes changes, drastic changes from boyhood to youth to old age, like that. But the sense of I within this body doesn't change. And then there is the ultimate death, where the sense of I within that set of body and senses changes. And sobriety is that one is not disturbed by it. A sober man is not disturbed by it. Krishna says. That's the instruction. Part is the changes is not just that my body is growing older and I just need to not be disturbed. But along with the changes of my body, external to this body, so many changes are happening. Environmental factors are changing. You know, the weather gets hot, it can get cold, one day it can be very wonderful. It's not that only bad things have to be ignored. According to Krishna's instruction, even the so-called good things are supposed to be ignored. Meaning, oh, it's fantastic weather. I should stop all my devotional practices and enjoy the weather. Because when the weather is bad, anyway, I'm not inspired to do it. The so-called good and bad within this world are only within this world, are material. So if something is good, that will come to an end. If something is bad, that will also come to an end. Nothing remains. So environmental factors change, relationships change on a material platform. Those who were friends don't remain friends. Those who said, I love you, may not say that again. Something that I liked when I was younger, I don't like anymore. Something I did not like when I was young, I like now. Things change. That's a constant change. Some people call it growth. Some people call it changing of personality. Whatever we call it, these are all names that we give. But the essential phenomenon is that there is constant change. It's in a state of flux. And this living entity, we, is looking through the senses at the world and trying to figure out how to manage those changes. Because for the soul, this kind of change in body is artificial. It's not used to it. Or at least, it's not its nature. So so-called suffering that we describe is the soul's inability to grapple with the severe changes in the material circumstances. And all of that difficulty comes because of wrong identification. When the soul is bewildered to think, I am this body. It has its own identity that it's eternal, but it's now it's forced to think, I am this body. And it's a very difficult situation. So Krishna's overall plan of creating this material world is to help the living entity come to his senses. For the living entity to understand the temporality of this material world. So death is definitely a part of it. It also is there to show the futility of material pursuit. The futility is struggling so hard, collecting this, accumulating that, aggrandizing this or that for name, for prosperity. For whatever reasons one is motivated in collecting material things, it's futile. Because when the person dies, all of it goes away. Some people might be famous for a few hundred years after they die. But eventually that will also go away. Even if it remains in name only. It has absolutely no value to the person who's dead and gone. Oh, such and such was such a famous man. So what? The person is not there to enjoy that fame. It's gone. Long gone in some other form of life. Perhaps in another body glorifying himself in a previous life. Who knows? Or chastising himself in a from a previous life. Oh, that fellow, such a rascal. Maybe himself occupying that body previously. Who knows? So material pursuit is futile. So here, King Puranjana, who is the conditioned living entity, does not like this change, does not like sense gratification to come to an end. Apriyaha priya yoshitam. For those who are very attached to sense gratification, this thing called death, which asasada savaikala, which by all means certainly comes, and there's no escape from it, like they say, death and taxes, cannot escape from it. Someone might even escape paying taxes, which by the way, yesterday was that day. Someone might escape paying taxes. One cannot escape death. There are only some persons who can escape the fear of death. So those who are attached to fruitive activities, the word fruitive means motivated by material profit. It also means the persons who think that they are the cause of their happiness. I'll say it a little differently. Fruitive persons are those who think that I have the power and the ability to manipulate my circumstances in such a way that I can extract or I can maximize my happiness from it. This is why capitalism and fruitive mentality match very well, because that's the whole idea of a capitalist mentality, is to maximize profit. Under all circumstances, you maximize profit. To maximize profit, you have to either maximize your revenue or you have to minimize your expense. Right? So fruitive mentality also means you maximize your piety and you minimize your impiety, so that there are no obstacles in enjoying the facilities of this world. So some people pursue the facilities of this world by force, by power, like we read two verses ago. Ishwaroham aham bhogi, siddhoham balavan sukhi. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I have perfected, and therefore I am happy. If anyone interferes in that, I will separate their head from their body. And not only have I done that, in the future I will do it again. And it doesn't matter. Whoever it is, if they interfere in my sense gratification, that will be the end of them. So the quintessential example is Hiranyakashipu. He did not like that his own son felt that there was someone more powerful than his father, Hiranyakashipu. The rest of the whole universe was scared of him. Apparently, by the movement of his eyebrow, all the demigods would shiver. But only Prahlad did not care for him. And he was hell-bent on convincing Prahlad that that's not the case, that he is the master of everything. He could have said, whatever, who cares what you think? No, but for him, Prahlad was, you have to agree that I am the master and there cannot be Vishnu. So that brought his death. Ravana was like that. Apparently Ravana had built a throne so high up that every day as he would ascend the steps, each of the major planetary personalities, you know, would all be lying down and he would step on them and ascend to his throne. That was his power, meaning he has so much control over all the planetary systems that nobody dared to, you know, challenge him. So it's written in the Valmiki Ramayana that someone told him, you know, every time you step on these planets, it really hurts them, but you're not able to relish that pain that they are undergoing. So you should ask them to sleep on their back. So when you step on them, you can actually see them grimacing. He said, oh, that's a very good idea. So the planet of Shani or Saturn, apparently his vision is unfavorable. So when Ravana would step up, he would step on Shani. And Shani looked at him, grimacing. He said, oh. Apparently that was one of the influences of Shani on Ravana. But that was his power. I'm the controller. And anyone who interferes in my sense, and it doesn't matter who it is. Even if it is the consort of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I will go after her. He had a warning. If ever he forces himself on a woman against her wish, he would die. That was in a previous age, Vaidehi had cursed him. It said that Vaidehi was reincarnated as Sita Devi, but he had disturbed her penance, so she cursed him. If you ever force yourself on a woman against her wish, you will die. So this whole time that he had taken Sita Devi away, he didn't do anything. He just tried to convince her. He used all his demon associates and assistants to, you know, brainwash her. No, no, Ravana is not such a bad guy. If you don't, then he will kill you. He will eat you up. So say yes, like that. And for such persons, another aspect of those who are fruitively oriented or entangled is that they also have kutumba sakta chetasa, kutumba sakta, so very attached to kith and kin, very attached to family. They need family in this sense. They need all the friends and relatives. It's for them to show off and enjoy the benefits of their fruitive work. Because if they don't have anyone, who will they show their wealth off to? So it is said that when one person is poor, all the relatives go away. When the person becomes rich, all relatives show up. Because they all want to take a part of it. So it's like that phenomenon is there even today. When a rich man dies, all sorts of people show up and say, well, I was the illegitimate child of this person. You know, when he was in college, you know, he had met my mother. I'm the rightful owner of all the wealth that he has left behind. A lot of people claim like that. And a person also wants. Pumsa striya maithuni bhavameta tayor hidaya granthi mahuhu. The moment there is a sexual contact, the heart becomes completely entangled. And in that entangled condition, atho griha kshetra suta apta vittar. Griha, one needs a house to enjoy and to feel, to experience the facilities of that entanglement with a woman. Griha. Kshetra needs some occupation so that he can earn and come back and, you know, feel welcomed and patted on his back that, oh, you're such a wonderful maintainer of all of us. And then Suta needs byproducts, children, to say, oh, look at my children. How wonderful are my children. How nicely I have given them benefits. How nicely I've educated them and taken care of them, and tomorrow they will become such great personalities. Apta, relatives. All relatives are necessary to say, you've done well for yourself in your life. What a nice, you're very successful, very good, very good. Vitta, who needs wealth, because in this modern world, wealth is the emblem or yardstick of success. It doesn't matter how intelligent and how knowledgeable a person might be. That's not the yardstick of success. The yardstick of success is how much money you can make. If you have money, even if one is an idiot, hey, you're a great personality. Whoever is a great personality. This is the symbol of Kali Yuga. That person is famous and powerful when he or she is wealthy. Has got nothing to do with the real values of life. Aho atho kshetra, atho griha kshetra suta apta vritya janasya mohoyam aham mama iti. That's what bewilders a person, thinking, I am this body, everything is mine. So Prabhupada quotes that there is a great personality who met different persons along the way one time. He met a prince. He told him, Rajaputra Chiranjeeva. Chiranjeeva means may you have a long life, don't die. He told him, Muniputra Majeeva. This Prabhupada says, brahmachari, don't live, just die. He met a hunter and he said, ma jiva ma mara, don't live, don't die. And to a devotee he said, jiva va maro va, it doesn't matter whether you're alive or you're dead. Same personality, but giving blessings according to their condition. So Prabhupada's explaining, for a prince, his whole life is so steeped in sense gratification that he just doesn't care what's the consequence. So this is a life of irresponsibility. What's the definition? One doesn't care for consequences. That's irresponsibility. It doesn't matter. Let my sense gratification come at any cost. It may mean that others have to die, others have to suffer, no problem. It means I have to die and suffer, no problem. I want to enjoy right now. This is called irresponsibly living. So the saint blessed him, Chiranjeeva, don't die. Because if you die, your destination is terrible. Better not to die. Muniputra, ma jiva, don't live. Because the whole world is really full of so much disturbance to your austerity. There's constant onslaught of some disturbance from the material energy. So better not to live, ma jiva, better to die. Because if you're living, then it's, you know, it's a painful austerity. As far as the hunter is concerned, he blessed him, ma jiva ma mara, don't live. In one lecture, Prabhupada says butcher. Butcher, hunter, same thing. He told the butcher, don't live. Because every day, to just earn your livelihood, you have to mercilessly kill so many animals. So don't live. Such life is very painful. It's very ghastly. Ma jiva. And by the way, ma mara, don't die either, because the consequences of all that you've done so far, so much killing, karmically is so severe that better not to die. So don't die, don't live. And to a devotee, he said, well, it doesn't matter if you're alive or you're dead. Because if you're alive in this life, all you'll be caring about is serving Krishna. If you die and go to another destination, other level of existence, that also you'll be serving Krishna. So for you, death is irrelevant. So people ask, oh well, if that's the case, you know, the living entity is eternal and is in this artificial position, doesn't a devotee die? Yeah, devotee also dies. But the death for a person who's not a devotee, a person who's not cultivating what's called Atma Tattva, the real pursuit of self-realization, for a person, death is a very painful experience because it means the end of all that they're working for. For a devotee who's cultivating the process of self-realization, death means just a change of circumstance, but continuation of what they were doing anyway. So the whole experience of death is different, or supposedly different. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's an analogy to explain it. He said that a cat or a tigress or a lioness, when the cat pounces on a mouse and grabs the mouse by its neck, then for that mouse, that's death. And it's a very fearful experience. Because that's it, that's the end of it. It's the end of being a mouse. The same cat picks up her kitten, her litter, yeah, kitten, by the neck to take it from one place to another place. But the kitten doesn't feel fear. It feels the love of its mother, taking from one position to another position. It's the same cat, it's the same jaws, the same clamp, a very different experience. So for a devotee, death is meant, hey, it's another play, another arrangement Krishna is making for me to serve him better. The fear comes from identification of the body. Oh, my body, my relatives, my situation. So fruitive mentality is represented by like this severe resistance to change in circumstances. Now, circumstances change this way, that way, and there are different factors that change circumstances. Some are forced circumstantial changes. Some are interactive circumstantial changes. Someone said something, someone did something. I was coming home after a late program and I was really hungry and they forgot to keep prasadam for me. Or I was really hoping to read that book and some other devotee took away that book. Or I really chanted very nicely, I was very happy, I came to the association of devotees and someone said something, I was either insulting or sarcastic, or and then I wondered, I chanted so nicely, why is it? So the steadiness is to consider as circumstances are changing around us, and which, by the way, they're changing constantly, how best to remain on the track of the mood of service to Krishna. That's progressively going to help us become less attached to the conception of how things around me should be so that I'm happy. If we get up every day in the morning and we are, you know, really chanting nicely and on time for all the programs, the thing is we get attached to that. And one little change, you know, something happens, and then we get very disturbed. Oh, why is that? So a definition of happiness is, like Mahavishnu Prabhu was saying, to not look at the external circumstances, to not have a preconceived idea of how the external circumstances should be or should not be. Both are preconceived ideas. Oh, this is not nice, that's nice. And the more one looks out there, the more one is setting oneself up for frustration. It doesn't mean that this is not a very favorable circumstance. I've been studying the life of Ajamila. So, in the case of Ajamila, he was 88 years old, but he had a very young son, very young boy, almost infant or a toddler. And although he was, by some good fortune, because of his past devotional activity, he named his son Narayana. So when he was on his deathbed, he saw these three personalities descend to yank his subtle body out of his gross body. These are the Yamadutas, the angels of death, whatever, I don't know how they're called. And he was so attached to his son. He called, Narayana! Narayana, where are you? Narayana, come here. He was thinking about his son. He didn't want to leave the company of his son. And lo and behold, fantastic, four personalities showed up. Four armed, dressed like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, with blazing helmets and beautiful earrings and nice garlands made of fresh forest flowers. And They said, well, hold on, you cannot take him. This Ajamila belongs to us. Oh, no, no. Here's all the list of things Ajamila has done. He was a Brahmana, he gave up all his Brahminical activity. He went ahead and, you know, rejected his wife and children. And he married this wine-drinking prostitute. Sura Pani is what the word is. Prophet, wine-drinking prostitute. And even up to the ripe age of 88, he fathered many children. And completely gave up all his pious Brahminical activities. Became a plunderer. Yet, he chanted the name of Narayana. Oh, and by the way, he even chanted the name unknowingly, unintentionally. It doesn't matter. The fact that at the time of death he chanted the Lord's names, that means he is a rightful entrant into Vaikuntha. So the Yamadutas say, well, hold on a minute. This is unfair. He is fit for punishment. This is what the Dharma Shastra say. And so the Vaikuntha Vasis say, oh, hold on, all your Dharma Shastra is invalid. It doesn't matter how impious a person might be, how sinful they might be. They might have sinned for thousands and thousands of lifetimes. But if at the point of death they remember the name of Krishna, it just doesn't matter. Everything else is nullified. So Yamadutas are bewildered. In the next chapter, they go back to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj explains, no, that is right, actually. And they've never seen such an event, never experienced something like this. It's the potency of the holy name. So we don't have to bank on that. Our idea is not that we have to bank on, like Ajamila, I might chant the name. But our process is to practice chanting of Krishna's name, so that we're not disturbed by changes, the variations in material energy, the different permutations, the different combinations. To not be disturbed is definitely a high state of consciousness. The intermediary state is to learn to tolerate it. And somehow or the other continue our devotional practices as things are constantly changing. To expect that everything will be just perfect is really silly. It will not happen. It may happen for a short period of time just to trick us, but it's not necessary. Things will always be changing. So, certain thoughts, any comments, questions? Yes, Himanshu Prabhu, do you have a mic?
I was thinking that when we're not very sufficiently realized, we have some conception of what it would be like to be Krishna conscious. We think, oh, when I can, you know, my every round is just completely focused, or when I'm giving very powerful discussions, or when I've read all the books and I can quote all the scriptures. And we have some, you know, we have some conceptions of what we think it means to be Krishna conscious. We may not express them in a gross way, but subtly that's what's going on in the mind. Essentially, it's the same thing as what's being done here. We want a pleasing situation for the mind and senses. So I recently came to this realization that, you know, this is something very pernicious deep in the mind. And I've been trying to chant, not thinking about creating a pleasing situation for the mind and senses. But we're chanting for service. However, the doubt comes that if we are rendering service to Krishna, then it creates auspiciousness. It creates good feelings in the heart. It creates gratitude in the hearts of others. So then a nice situation will be created. So anyways, this is, I guess I just need some clarification on this topic. I don't have an exact question, but maybe you could speak something about this thing, about chanting for service and not for a pleasing situation for the mind and senses, what that means.
In the nectar of devotion, the unfolding of bhakti is described that there are six stages. And the first two, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's life, the first two leaves that appear in the Bhakti Lata are Klesha Agni and Shubhada. Klesha Agni is that one's material miseries burn away or die. and Shubhada, a sense of auspiciousness, is awakened. So in that section, Prabhupada describes and quotes from different lives of different devotees that the idea that material difficulty will go away is a fallacious idea. What it means is once identifying with those circumstances by which they say this is favorable or unfavorable will be gone. Klesha Agni is this, the material circumstance, like for example, suppose winter is very severe. Some people get so disturbed by that that they just cannot perform anything, they cannot do anything. But the first stage is the one says, oh, winter's winter, whatever it needs to happen. You know, I need to wear warmer clothes, I need to make sure I have my ginger tea, I need to whatever. But I'm here to chant, I'm here for Mangala Arati. That's Klesha Agni, because it's not an issue anymore. That means the execution of bhakti is not dependent on the favorability or unfavorability of material circumstances. But circumstances don't necessarily have to change. And Shubhada is that despite the changes, despite the variability of material circumstances, one is feeling connected in one's devotional service. One is feeling connected to Krishna. That's auspicious. Okay, someone said like this, well, it's auspicious because I got to do a little introspection about myself. Someone said, you know, someone appreciated me very much. It's auspicious in that I've come to understand that how much I hanker for it. Ooh, that's some area of work here. Someone insulted me and that bothered me. That's some area of work here. Or someone appreciated me and I was able to pass it on to the Guru Parampara and Krishna. I was transparent in that situation. That, oh, it's only Krishna's mercy. Oh, that's nice. It's so nice to... So it's depending on the circumstances or sense of auspiciousness is that. I mean, this is just a very simple explanation. This Prabhupada writes more on it. So it's not that the mind and senses cannot be pleased. It is the way in which, the modality in which the mind and senses are pleased are different than what another ordinary person might hanker for the mind and senses to be pleased. It's called higher taste. The circumstances may still be the same or even worse, but a person is still peaceful. Why? I can chant. There's so much I've come to know about myself. There's so much work to do. My dear Krishna, please give me your mercy. I'm not disturbed. I'm feeling a strong sense of Krishna's protection. It's there. The circumstances may be changing. But I'm confident that I can reach out to Krishna's mercy. That's pleasing to the mind and senses. Whatever is happening, I'm very fortunate to still have prasadam every day. There are so many persons who don't get any prasadam. So that's pleasing to the mind and senses. And for one who doesn't feel like that, then the mind is still agitated. It is still that Shubhada hasn't awakened fully. That means the mind and senses are still attracted to happiness independent of Krishna. Bhagyavan is the phrase. The one becomes fortunate. That's all right? Anything else? Yes, Lochan Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu. One of the things that's kind of fearful about death is unknown.
Okay? Right.
Should a devotee be concerned about, you know, that? As far as where he might end up
he might end up after death?
Yeah.
Yes, must be concerned. Yes.
You know, like if he might end up in the lower planets trying to serve Krishna in the lower planets, should he be concerned about something like that?
No, and yes. One should be concerned that this opportunity should not be wasted. One should be concerned that I should make the maximum utilization of the facility to execute devotional service in this body. That concern should not become a fear that stops us from doing what is necessary now. Oh, what's the use? I've anyway become so old. I don't think I can go back to Godhead because I don't have so much time. I don't think it's... That is very detrimental. In fact, the concern is considered genuine when that concern impels us to say, let me make it much better. Let me somehow or the other get Krishna's attention. Then that concern is genuine. If that concern is giving us a defeatist idea, then it's said to be impelled by the modes of nature. But yes, one should be concerned. Responsible life means life where one considers consequences. So we don't have to be only concerned about what next life form we'll have. We can start with what my words and actions will do to others. And that sort of pervades all other activities as well. Yeah? Glenn?
The body goes through many deaths, but I stay the same. And being in touch with that I, and distinguishing that from my material gross self, is that something I need to understand, or one needs to understand, or is it just something that comes naturally?
Well, one needs to understand in this sense that one needs to hear about it. Because Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita with that understanding. Dehina asmin yatha dehe. And when that realization comes, or when that experience comes, then that understanding becomes deeper, practical. Until then, it's a theoretical concept that we are aware of. So there is no way of, or this is the way of understanding that yes, I am moving in the right direction because I have a reference. Reference is Krishna's words. Because any experience that's not within the purview of Krishna's words, we cannot say it's a factual experience. For example, somebody might be chanting and they see red light. They may think, you know, it's a self-realization. I see the light. I see the light. Krishna doesn't say that. The seeing of light or the enlightenment is a whole different experience. No shochati, na kankshati. Hankering and lamentation are stopped. One is, you know, prasanna. One is always happy. So there's... One time someone came to Srila Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, when I chant, I see red light. And Prabhupada said, continue chanting, it'll go away. So we need to have a reference, an absolute, and then the experience that has to match that absolute. So yes, understanding is important. Okay? Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanam.